Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Well, welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by a recently anointed Global Director of Sales Development, Special Olympics volunteer, and a second place national teaching competition finalist from the Korean Ministry of Education. And an ex-cop, but we're not going to talk about any of that today. Today, we're here to focus on sort of designing what your SDR's day should look like, and then how you can sort of design your life and work diligently to fill in the gaps between sort of fantasy and fiction. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the show, Taft Love. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great, man. So, I love that quote of sort of like bridging the gap between, you know, fiction and reality. Where did your sort of desire to do this come from?
So I find that anytime I talk to sales leaders, sales development is mimics startups in general, and that everybody's killing it all the time and everything's going well. And what I find is that a lot of times when I talk to other sales development leaders, you don't hear about the real problems they're dealing with. You hear about some great solution they built to solve all the problems that are out there, or how new tools have just sort of solved everything. Mm-hmm. But I found that the reality is that that rarely happens. There are a lot of little problems that plague you and cause inefficiencies. And so early on at Smart Recruiters, one of the things I wanted to do was, as I said, bridge the gap between this fictional idea of the perfect SDR day and reality, and get them as close together as possible. Well, while it's never going to be perfect, we're really striving for as close as we can get.
Cool. So let's talk about your fiction then. What do you want your ideal, what's an ideal date, first date for you? I mean, sorry. what's the ideal, what do you want your ideal SDR's day to look like?
So the perfect day for an SDR in this ideal world is you come in the morning. When you sit down at your desk, you have tasks ready. Every task is accompanied by information about the call you're about to make, or an email that needs to be customized in some way. And you blow through your tasks, you spend the morning hours, and this is, you know, West Coast, and it might differ for East Coast, might be middle of the day you do this. But anyway, you have a section of time set aside early in the day during which you knock out all your tasks. Once your tasks are complete, then you switch to preparing the next day's activities, and you sequence new prospects, you prepare new accounts, and at the end of the day, you've added your quota, your minimum number of contacts and accounts to sequences, and you go to sleep, wake up, and do the same thing again.
Perfect. And what are the goals for, like, if you execute that? I guess, what's a goal look like on a sort of daily basis, and what does that translate to in terms of monthly?
So to give you an idea, to put some numbers to it, we sort of work backwards. We started with some basic assumptions, some educated guesses in terms of the number of calls and the number of contacts and the number of calls associated with those contacts and emails and such that would be required to hit our goal in terms of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And when I say we, I'm referring specifically to my senior director, Chris Bryson, and I. We sat down early in our time together here at Smart Recruiters and sort of mapped out what we thought was an operational path to our goals. And as you, and I'm sure plenty of the listeners know, when you're in an early stage startup, it's not always possible when they bring you a goal to work backwards from this perfectly formed funnel, and you know all your conversion rates, and you can say, oh, well, if you want that many opportunities, I'm gonna need two more people and another $1,000 for data. No, you figure it out and you get it done. And so that's the position in which we found ourselves. And so we started with some educated guesses, worked backwards up the funnel, and figured out that on average, it's going to take us, it's going to take every outbound SDR, we call them EBRs, enterprise business reps, And so these guys and girls are putting three new accounts at a minimum every day into their funnel. And each account comes with a minimum of five contacts. Now, most of these folks exceed these numbers, but that's the minimum required to hit our goal. And then we script out pretty carefully, and not like phone scripting, but in terms of the sequences, using our email automation tool, we script out the tasks associated with each contact. So if I put a contact in, unless they finish the sequence early, we know exactly how many activities, and therefore within a small margin of error, how much time is going to be taken to work that contact. And so that's sort of the funnel we built based on these estimates. And so far we found it to be relatively accurate. We've had some misses along the way, but we have a pretty good idea of what it takes to hit our goal every month.
Gotcha. And so that's three new accounts a day and five contacts per account.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 contacts.
Exactly. And I should caution anyone listening to don't just take those numbers and assume they'll work for you. This is, again, based on some educated guesses. And a lot of the inputs that went into these educated guesses were things like the size of our target companies, the number of companies we wanted to hit, the width of the net we wanted to cast, if you will. Mm-hmm. At PandaDoc, we had a totally different strategy that worked pretty well for bringing in, you know, meetings for the AE teams, but it required a totally different strategy, and this would not have worked there. So this is not a one size fits all.
Gotcha. And let's talk sort of results so far. So if somebody's, you know, working towards, you know, on their own side, closing the gap, what can they sort of expect? What's help us paint that picture.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're working toward figuring this out for yourself, the first thing you need is some data, right? You need some idea of what works for you. And that can be really hard to get. And if you're both new to sales development and you don't have a lot of data to build from, it can be really hard to make these guesses. Mm-hmm. But I think the first step is to essentially come up with a sequence. What do you think will get people to respond? Come up with messaging and a sequence. And, you know, does your buyer in your experience respond to calling, emails, things like that? And once you have a sequence, you can work backwards. You can say, you know, if each contact gets this sequence, that's X number of activities. I think an SDR can handle 2,000 activities in a month. And that's, you know, 20 activities per contact. So that's 100 contacts a month that they should sequence, and sort of do the math backwards and walk your way back to a specific number that you can then apply across your team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And in terms of maybe specific results from your team, can you share?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm ballparking here. I don't have the reports in front of me, but generally speaking, we're upmarket from where we started, but sort of blended averages, I'd say an EBR across SME, small, medium enterprise, and enterprise, which is above 5,000 employees. We're looking at 10 to 15 meetings per month. A great month is 18, 19 meetings, but mm-hmm. to be frank with our buyer, that's pretty rare. If we were selling into sales or marketing, I think it would be very different. Yep. But selling into HR, it's a whole different ballgame.
So tell me a little bit about how you operationalize the SDR's day.
Absolutely. So operationalizing is something we really focused on. And so step one was to limit their work as much as possible to one screen. And we chose Salesforce to be, because it's our system of record, mm-hmm. we also wanted it to be their sort of home base for the second half of the day, the sequencing new accounts and prospects. And so we did that by utilizing the trigger functionality between Salesforce and our email tool. We happen to use Outreach.io, but there are several that can accomplish the same thing. I want to be tool agnostic here, because there's no one tool that's important for this. But essentially, we set it up so that within Salesforce, an SDR can research a company, put in all of the information necessary to set up the account in Outreach, and then move to a contact and create or work with an existing contact and update the data to include email personalizations and specific direction in terms of what messaging the person should receive when they get the first email and subsequent tasks. And all of this is done within Salesforce, and you can save a Salesforce record and trigger the prospect being pushed into Outreach.
Gotcha. So it's all based on that contact record screen.
Absolutely. All of the things you would have done in Outreach live inside the contact. This strips away a lot of time that in my experience was spent, A, learning your way around Outreach, B, it's a great tool. But like any strong tool, you end up with a lot of possibilities for messing things up and a lot of buttons and a lot of things that can be confusing especially for someone without a lot of experience. With this system, I can take a new rep and show them the few fields they need to fill out, how to save a record, and they're already moving forward.
Gotcha. And I think you shared a view of your contact mm-hmm. with us. And for those that are just listening, I'll share a Google Doc afterwards that's got the links to all of these. But maybe I'll just get you to walk us through what we're looking at here, Taft.
Absolutely. So what you see here is a screenshot of our contact record. So once an account is set up, you'll notice that we have some text in here pulled from the account object. And there's a reason that the company name normalized and the ATS custom, which is like a normalized version of the ATS name. And by the way, ATS is what we sell, and therefore, you know, our competitors are in this field that we merge into emails. You know, for example, in looking at your website, I saw that you use, in this case, iSIMS. Mm-hmm. This is really important to us because one bad merge field, one poorly written merge field can ruin an entire email. So we rewrite everything that is likely to be merged into an email within Salesforce. So on the account object where you see test company here, we didn't merge the account name from Salesforce because we don't want to run the risk of test company, comma, incorporated, period, being merged mm-hmm. into an email. So we rewrite everything that's merged.
Who actually does that rewrite?
The SDR does it because it's their email and it's their voice. And I, for example, might write testco, and someone else might write something totally different. And mm-hmm. This is something that eventually we may outsource as well, but frankly, it's a pretty low friction step and isn't a huge cost in terms of time.
If they're here already, you may as well go through a couple things that make sense to have a human that you trust doing this kind of thing.
Absolutely. And what you see on the right side is something that's really important. The names are a bit cryptic, but you see OB Custom 1 and OB Custom 2. And essentially what we're doing here is merging customizations into emails. So we can, at scale, customize emails from within Salesforce. So you'll see beside OB Custom 1, it says intro. So that's the intro sentence to the email. And mm-hmm. Custom 2 is PS. And so if you put something in Custom 2, Outreach will add PS and then merge in whatever you wrote in the PS field there. And this is really powerful and a fast way to make truly customized emails without having to manually write each email within Outreach.
Hmm. Okay. And so they're filling this in as they go through and create the contact.
Exactly. So what you don't see here is below are several panels, one of which is Node, which is a data source we use, and it has some contextual information about the company and often the person. Below that is LinkedIn. And so from within Salesforce, you have a lot of information about the person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll, you know, do Google searches, things like that. But we have the 3-minute rule. Unless it is a C-level or otherwise someone who you know is a decision maker and is therefore worth spending more time on, you have 3 minutes per contact.
Gotcha. So let me just kill this and go back to, so now that we've got the contact record sort of dialed in a little bit here, what's our next step? I guess moving on to the account view?
So we generally start with the account view and then go to the contact view.
Oh, okay.
So we have something that is, I'd say, account-based sales development light. And the reason I say that is true account-based sales development is selling to Coke differently than you sell to Pepsi. Mm-hmm. We're not that high speed in terms of account-based sales development or marketing, but yeah, we sell to companies with similar characteristics similarly. And so, what that means for us is we start with the account, we research the account, we confirm that the information we think we know about the account is true. And then we choose it as a target and start to enter information in Salesforce. So you may recall that on the contact record, there were a couple of boxes that said pulled from the account record. Well, the account record is actually where you find those. So you'll see fields required to activate. Mm-hmm. You'll notice test company and ISIMs are in there. This is actually where a rep types in the name of the company and the competitor's ATS.
Gotcha. Okay. So when they create the account, which they have to do three of these a day, mm-hmm, then they have to enter their normalized name, their ATS, you've got data sources or they're doing some Googling.
Exactly.
Gotcha. And what's next?
Another thing you're going to look at, and there's no specific order to this, but the bottom right of the red boxes I've added, you'll notice there are fields that start with RU dash. I have syntaxes for different fields. RU is a roll up, meaning this is information being gathered from another object. One of Salesforce's, I guess you could call it a weakness, is that the objects aren't always good at talking to each other. And when I say object, I mean task, account, contact, things like that. So in this case, sales activities, the RU sales activities 45 days is all activities completed by salespeople in the last 45 days across all contacts associated with this account. So there is a series of roll-ups. The first on the contact level says how many activities from salespeople are associated with this contact. And then the one on the account says, and of all the contacts, add up all of those numbers and display it here. So all of the contacts in this company have mm-hmm. six total activities from sales in the last 45 days. So this is a good indicator that, like, hold on a minute, let's see if somebody else is working this.
Yeah.
Somebody else has called or emailed people within this company at least six times. And so that's sort of where we start. You know, we look at our own data first and make sure we're not stepping on toes. Mm-hmm. And then we move to the required fields to activate and then try to fill in when possible. Often these are filled in later when we're talking to someone, you know, we find out that their current contract ends at a certain date or something to that effect, or you'll see employee override. We found out that the number of employees is different than what we're showing in the CRM. So that's where a human can enter the correct number, things like that.
Gotcha.
And obviously we label these panels in such a way that makes it really easy to understand what you're supposed to do.
Talk to me about two questions here. So activated our roll up of activated contacts in, mm-hmm. in the bottom right here. That's recently added contacts.
Roll up of activated contacts. Where do you see that?
Just underneath RU sales activities, 45 days on the bottom right red box there.
Gotcha. Right, in the red box. Sorry. So the roll up of activated contacts. This is our internal terminology.
Yeah.
Activated for an account and a contact have different definitions. An activated account is an account for which you have marked a target. You've said this is my target. You've added in the required fields to activate, so mm-hmm. therefore it's activated. And there is at least one contact associated with that account that is active. And so that's where this roll up is getting its data. And then if you go to the contact level, there are there you go. So you'll see step two, choose and launch sequence. So yep. Once you finish step one, and then you go down and choose a sequence to drop them in and launch the sequence in step two, it's now activated. And so if you were to fill in all that stuff and save this contact record, then yep. The associated account would have a one in the activated contacts with the account.
Very cool.
These roll-ups sort of help us at a glance understand what's happening within the account and all of its sort of lower level objects like contact, opportunity, task, things like that.
Very cool. I love how sort of seamless you've made it. There are literally no excuses for not doing my work if I'm one of your SDRs.
That's the goal.
Another thing that I love that you have in here under try and fill in when possible is the re-engagement date. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that as an SDR or SDR team is probably one of the most commonly missed pieces of information, that you get that date, you know, oh, it's, 2018, 2019 is when our contract's up. But the average lifetime of an SDR is a year and a half.
Exactly.
Or less. So if it's more than 18 months out, is that information going to be like, is that going anywhere? Is that going to happen? What happens when this account gets, you know, toasted and that piece of data just gets lost in a note somewhere or lost in your head? You know, the having this on the account field or on the account record, amazing.
Absolutely. And starting soon, we're actually implementing KPIs around completion of this data.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, we are actually incentivizing the things for which we're asking. So you got to fill in this data, and it's now part of your job beyond just me asking you to fill it in. You now have a number to hit.
Very cool. Now that we've got the contact record and the account record all sorted, you know, you're launching all these things automatically. How do you make sure you're not shooting blanks?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are two ways here. One is, fortunately, Outreach has some built-in safety features that stop you from merging blanks into emails. But beyond that, the danger with working exclusively out of Salesforce is you may not realize until the next day that you failed to fill in all of the required values, and therefore your sequence failed in Outreach. And again, this is something that's true of any modern email automation tool. So the way we deal with that is requiring within Salesforce that everything be filled in order to save a record. So what we're looking at here is a validation rule for the contact object, I believe. And yes, this is a contact object validation rule. And so what you're seeing here is if you choose OB launch sequence, meaning outbound launch sequence, like that translates to once you save this record, it's going to trigger a launch in Outreach. And you haven't chosen this as a target account, then it's going to throw an error and say, whoa, you're missing information.
Hmm.
And so this is a really simple one, and you can build much more complex validation rules, and they're pretty easy once you understand just really basic Apex. But this is our internal safety feature to stop us from, as you said, shooting blanks.
Great. And so where will this error get thrown? Is it when you try and save that record?
Exactly. So the way validation rules work is when you write a validation rule, the functionality says, if this rule evaluates to true, throw an error. And then you can see the error message that will be thrown and the location in the screenshot here. And so, yes, whenever you try to save, it's going to throw that message, which occasionally can piss people off if they've put in a ton of information and then forgotten something. But fortunately, it preserves your information on the page. It doesn't delete what you've done when it throws the error.
Gotcha.
But it can be frustrating and is a really good incentive to learn what needs to be in the page to avoid just being pissed off all day.
Yeah. And rage quitting or rage closing the tab because it won't save and then losing all your information.
Yep.
Awesome. And you've got another validation rule here to share with us, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And I believe, yes. So
for those of you who are, again, listening to the podcast, just have a look in the show notes. I'm going to link to a document that's going to have links to screenshots. So it'll be a link to a link. But that way you can sort of see along, and probably best to watch this when you're back at your computer if you want to try implementing this stuff. The screenshots are great because you can literally just copy what Taft has done here. Sorry, Taft, go ahead.
No worries. You're right. You can, so the basic logic behind what I've written here can be applied to your fields. Just put in the names of your fields and cut and paste as needed. So what you see here is the way Apex is structured is much like Java, JavaScript, and that anything inside the AND function you add together. So for example, this says OB launch sequence is true, and so the comma means like the next phrase you read is an AND, is part of the AND function, or, and then so all three of the things following the OR function are ORs. So the way this reads in English is if OB launch sequence is checked, true just means checked, and any of the three fields within the OR phrase are within the OR function are blank,
yeah,
then it's going to throw an error.
And you won't be able to save the page.
You won't be able to save the page. And so as you can see below, the error message that's written there is going to show up in the location specified, which is right next to OB launch sequence.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it's basically going to tell you these three things must be filled in along with launching the sequence or it won't fire.
Awesome. So if you have all this, you have all this automation, but you have some safety checks to make sure that things aren't going crazy here.
Yeah, that's right. And while if you're listening or and if you're not a Salesforce admin and you're looking at this, it probably seems really complicated. But this is something that your Salesforce admin should be able to do in their sleep. And also, if you don't have a Salesforce admin, I mentioned Upwork earlier. Great place to go find somebody to help you write really basic stuff. Mm-hmm. Reach out on Upwork and for a few bucks, you can have somebody help you walk through this.
Perfect. Yeah. We've been using, Nick Ham at, it was, he's going to hate me cause I forgot the name of his company, but, he's been doing a great job for us. If anybody's curious and they don't have a Salesforce admin, just drop me an email, Colin with two L's at predictablerevenue.com. And I'll make a couple introductions for you. We've had run into a couple things like this where I'm sitting there looking at Apex and I'm like, I know I shouldn't be looking at Apex. And I know somebody who's intelligent can knock this out in 10 minutes, or I can sit here and waste 3 hours on it. So I'd rather pay somebody to do it in 20 minutes. And I probably sent him like 5 or 10 jobs where I'm like, hey, can you do this? I got back a bill for like 2.5 hours. And like, this is easily the like best invoice I've paid because it saved me a couple of days worth of frustration in Salesforce.
100%. There's no reason that a highly paid sales manager or leader should be spending a third of a day or half a day writing what someone else can do for a couple $100.
Exactly. So we've got the account and the contact page automated. We've got a little validation. What's our next step here?
So the next step is to teach Outreach or whatever email automation tool you have to recognize that the contact is ready to be sequenced. So essentially, all of the conditions are met for a trigger to fire and suck this information into a sequence and start emailing and setting up call tasks.
Okay. How do you do that?
All right. So I think you have somewhere in here a
workflow rule.
It's not a workflow rule, and you may not have it here. If you don't, here we go. So what we're looking at is not Salesforce. This is Outreach. In an effort to be tool agnostic again, I didn't include the Outreach logo, but just so you're not confused when you look for this in Salesforce, this is not Salesforce. There are multiple tools that can do this sort of thing. So essentially, this says if launch, which is that OB launch sequence field, is true, and sequence, which is the OB sequence name or whatever the field is where you actually choose the sequence into which you want this person pushed, mm-hmm. If that's true and the sequence matches referral ask, then do the trigger actions, which is below add to outbound non-target email, and set the stage in Outreach to attempting to contact. So this is super flexible. You don't have to set it up exactly this way, but this is just a simple way to pull a person into a sequence by saving a record in Salesforce.
Gotcha. And so this is basically a trigger that you set to, not a trigger, but something that's sitting in Outreach that's looking looking at your sales force, waiting for these two fields to be marked true and then referral ask.
That's correct. And any modern email automation tool that can integrate with Salesforce is likely to have something similar to this. I haven't seen many that are as flexible and powerful as Outreach's, but most of this can be accomplished with internal functionality in your tool or something like a Zapier connection.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we basically have the, you know, our contact account records. We've got the launch sequence set up. We've got our validation. And now I'm looking at these workflows and I'm like, what is Taft doing with these cool workflows? And what's the significance?
Okay, great. So let me take a look at the one you've got up here. So this workflow rule is another protection. So we have the validation rules that protect us from launching a sequence before all of the necessary information is there for Outreach to start sending emails. This workflow rule is built to protect us from resequencing someone. So that trigger we looked at, it said that if these couple things are true, then sequence the person. Mm-hmm. Well, for various reasons, we might stop the sequence, right? We may, the person may pick up the phone and talk to us and we pull them out of a sequence. Basically anything other than them unsubscribing or opting out leaves open some danger of them being resequenced. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we finish them, a couple days go by, and if the rules we've set up in Outreach say don't resequence someone until 5 days is up or something like that, once those 5 days are up, then all of the trigger requirements are again satisfied and it sucks them back into a sequence. Ask me how I know. this is not something we got ahead of. We had some embarrassing conversations about 5 days after the first time we started sequencing people and we marked them as finished in Outreach.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, they start getting the email they got from us 3 weeks ago again. And so this workflow rule, one way to think ahead, and to get ahead of this problem for yourself is you need to find a way to automatically uncheck or somehow change the fields that feed into that trigger in an automated way. So you don't have to remember to go back and uncheck boxes, because as you get ramped up and once you hit scale with this and people have in a week sequenced, you know, 75, 100, 150 people sometimes for the SDRs that are working really hard. The last thing they're going to think to do is go and uncheck every box that they checked. So we do it for them with this workflow rule.
Gotcha. So to summarize this workflow rule in English, it's going to uncheck a box when?
Uncheck a box. In this case, it's, I believe it's a couple days after after it's first checked. So essentially just automatically count to 48 hours and uncheck it or something to that effect. I don't remember the specifics of this rule, but
gotcha.
It's some arbitrary amount of time that's short.
Just to prevent that sort of the Groundhog Day scenario.
That's exactly right.
The Bill Murray waking up to your email every day.
Yeah.
So walk me through this workflow here.
Okay. So what you see here is two things. The first is when someone checks the launch field. Mm-hmm. This records who checked it and when they checked it, a time date stamp. So this is valuable for us for two reasons. The first is it lets us report on how many people each EBR has sequenced during the month. So we can actually have a KPI around, we want you to sequence X number of contacts. And the other reason it's important is because the second red box here says 3 days after the trigger date, there's a field update and it unchecks that box. So that's the other part of the workflow we were just talking about. We actually uncheck the box so that it's not resequenced.
Gotcha. So it writes the date stamp, it unchecks the box, and it assigns it to that user.
So that's correct.
So adding the date stamp actually allows you in your reports to start counting.
Yep. So that's the beginning of your clock for 3 days. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I've tried running or tried like thinking about like, how are we going to create that report? But unless you have a date stamp on that field, then it's impossible.
Yep. And it becomes super easy once you have those two pieces, and then you can run a report that says summarize by SDR or EBR, and show me all of the date stamps from this month, or at the end of the month, last month, and you can check those numbers against KPIs.
Awesome. I know we've gone a little bit over time. This has been, I love getting to look inside people's Salesforce.
Sure.
Before we go, sort of one last question is, what were some of the areas that you got stuck on?
So one, we've talked about the not realizing until we pissed a few people off that you need to uncheck the box. Some other places were, we built the triggers, and that was interesting, and that was really a really great development for us, but then we had to put the tracking in place, because we realized shortly after people started sequencing prospects from within Salesforce that we don't have visibility into how many people they've sequenced. And so back to the date stamp that we were talking about allowing you to do reporting. And then we realized, well, we need to do the same with accounts as well. Another place we got stuck. So all of these things that I've shown you are answers to where we've gotten stuck, frankly. Another one was, how can we make sure we don't step on toes? If you look at an account, of course, it's an SDR's job to go research the account, look through the contacts. But if you have an account with 20 contacts that's been in existence for a couple years, and marketing has sent them literally, 100 emails over the last couple years, it can be really hard to figure out, has another salesperson been working this? Who the hell knows? So those roll-ups were our answer to that that version of getting stuck. And there have been a lot more along the way. And the one where we're stuck right now, we actually have a solution. We just were stuck on the bandwidth to implement it, is on the email side. How do we figure out how successful we are? Because, and Aaron is someone who can, definitely speak to this, reply rate and success rate are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so how do you at scale mark, how do you at scale figure out how successful the email portion of outreach is? Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem we're in the process of solving right now.
What's your solution?
So unfortunately, until AI can determine accurately the sentiment of an email, and I'm sure there are people out there who will say their company can, and I hope they're right, because we'll buy from you. But until we can accurately determine the sentiment of an email, a human is going to have to look at it, and they're going to have to manually mark it as a success. And then the problem becomes, well, how do you get a bunch of humans who look at emails super subjectively to decide what success means? How do you make that as objective as possible? So those are the things we're sort of whiteboarding right now and working through.
Very cool. I made a rule that we wanted to keep this like platform agnostic. So we haven't talked about our email tool, but we came up with the same thing, because we sort of came from an AI approach. We wanted to automate not so much of the outreach, not the human aspect, but more of the targeting, the sorting, the figuring out the cool metrics. And when we first embarked on our journey, what we realized was that we have all this great data in your inbox, but it's not categorized. And until AI gets exceptionally, exceptionally good, much better than it is today, you're going to need a human to do that. And so we figured, okay, well, how? We came up with a simple explanation, or a simple solution, which was just, everybody uses the same sort of similar type of templates every time. We just grouped them under, we made some calls about what's a positive, what's a neutral, what's a negative, and we just put those groups under positive, neutral, negatives. And now all your templates roll up under these categories. And so every time you're answering an email in our system, it's automatically categorized, not just by positive, neutral, negative, but what is the subclassification as well. And then we have obviously sentiments and workflows and things like that tied to it.
But, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a challenge that you're right. It's not going to go away until, AI gets really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I used to do this with filters and labels in my inbox. I would have I'd search for create a rule that would search for, you know, a string of text in my like positive template, and it would apply that label. And then once a week I would go back and I just look at, okay, these are my positives, neutrals, negatives. I would do manual counts. Well, that was very tedious, but it worked, right? Cause you can actually see the conversations there.
Yeah. It's such a cool problem to solve. I'm excited to see how you guys and other companies, sort of figure this out.
Yeah. There's so much happening in the space and, we've got, all of our competitors they've raised a bunch of money and, there's so much happening. It's a great time to be a salesperson. It's a great time to be starting a company with, in the sales enablement space. And, I'm really looking forward to what the next few years, show us.
Me too.
Right on. Well, Taft, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been informative. My brain is spinning and I'm dying to get into my Salesforce. So thank you.
Good stuff. And if you or anyone needs a hand with some of the basics, feel free to reach out to me. I'm sure you can put some basic contact information in the Google Doc. I'm happy to be a resource for anyone for free. I love this stuff and am happy to help.
Great. Thank you so much, Taft.
All right.